6.1, consideration approval invoices.
I'll move that we pay our bills.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. 6.2, consideration discussion amending it or establishing regulations regarding the use of trash dumpsters and directions to the city administrator.
I received a hasty complaint on odors and that time mosquitoes coming from the dumpster. So there was a request, can we allow the dumpsters because we know people need them?
Talking about construction dumpsters, right?
Yes, for the repair of homes.
Right.
That are in repair those sites. They charge, I think, for everything. Is that how they work it? When a dumpster's picked up, the charge is based on the number of...
There's two different charges. One is a rental, which is the lower number, and then what they call a pull. Every time you have it empty, there's a charge.
Which is why they have it sitting there so long.
Correct. Nobody wants to have it pulled until it's full.
So I wanted to see if we could explore some options on how to be reasonable, have the dumpsters there, let them be used. Seems to be a worse problem during the summer, which makes sense with the warmer weather, the mosquitoes and the odor. I'm not sure I have a solution, but I'd like to suggest that we give this some thought and if we come up with anything reasonable. Some of them are good.
How does city pass being allowed 40 days? And they require to turn it over in 30 days.
Turn it over, that's what they do?
Yeah, 30 days.
You know, one of the problems, and I know it is based on the dumpsters around my house and my home, is the dumpsters are for trash during construction, but what happens to workers when they're eating and whatever's in the bag that hasn't been finished, whether it's fish or whatever, shrimp heads or whatever goes in the dumpster. And then after a little while, the dumpster gets pretty stinky. So I don't know the solution there other than maybe.
I mean, in my case, the tall wood, I was 13 yards, I couldn't tell you that's on wheels. I bring it to the job in the morning, I fill it, I drive home. I come back in the morning, I bring it, fill it, drive home. That's because of that, so the customers like me. I don't leave the bay, there's never a pile in the front yard, I'll have a mailbox. It's always taken. And when it's full, I drive out to the dump.
That would be ideal, but I can't see many contractors doing that.
That's
it. It would be ideal.
That's when I first came here and found out that I was the dumpster way that it is, you pay the cost to bring it, you pay to fill it, you pay to dump it, you pay to fill it. You know, I was like, okay, well, I'll pay one time for it, and that's it.
And then pay the dumpster.
And plus doing that allows me to offer that with my company, the trash is never sitting there.
Now, I have seen smaller dumpsters, but not in this city, that actually have covers, similar to, let's say, a newspaper that size. And,
yeah, but I don't think you're going to see those.
We don't either.
Those small, let's see.
So I don't
that's like a 10 yard, isn't it? Something like that. 10 or 15.
I don't think that's going to work either. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking for options.
Some of the dumpsters are like full for a while and haven't appeared to be dumped. And that's where you can put some sort of time that because it's full, so it shouldn't sit full for 30, 40, 50, 80 days.
I think the odor is the easiest one to address, though, because our existing ordinances prohibit the noxious odors. It's just a matter of enforcement. We get a complaint about smells from the dumpster, we can address that. And the way they would have to solve that in this example is to have it pulled. And if you don't like the cost of having it pulled every 2 weeks, then you visit with your subs and you say, quit throwing fish in the dumpster. Construction debris is one thing, but garbage is another.
And doesn't that come to help him?
Sure.
I mean, you've got, if you have water or, whatever in there, you've got
mosquitoes and maggots, and then we have the rodents that show up. And
oh, oh yeah.
We're talking, not only is it an odor thing, but something
else. Well, we're also talking about, we're in the middle of reconstruction of the city, and it would be fruitless to put an ordinance out there saying there already is an ordinance, they're not allowed in the city, but we're just looking at, we're allowing them in the city. I think the odor idea is an enforcement action we can work on, isn't, for lack of a better word, an angle we can work on it, and come up, I mean, the end result is to get some things moving that are stagnant, and maybe we'll look at it that way.
I think one of the other problems is a lot of the owners aren't around, so the house construction starts, the owners, wherever, has to be in some place, isn't around. So they're not really subjected to the odors. And then if there's garbage in there, it rains and it oozes out too. So it'll be up to the neighbors to complain, that's all. And like David said, if there's odor or it's oozing out, then I guess the city can deal with that.
Would we challenge our enforcement officer to make a survey and bring us back something to talk about next time? Would that be a way to start working on it?
Well, I think it's public education, that we can put something out that if you have odor issues from a host of things. I mean, if we're going to do that, it's not just limited to the dumpsters. Bring it to our attention. And they may think we can't do anything about it, is what I'm saying, when in fact there is something we can do about it, and we just aren't necessarily hearing about it.
Do you have any idea of how many dumpsters we have? I've never looked into that. Maybe it's I see them all the time, and I've never...
I would estimate we have more than 50 in the city right now.
More than 50?
You know, it's part of the permitting process, though.
Yeah, we require a dumpster to be left on the property for new construction. And then for remodeling, there's typically a dumpster, whether it goes home every day as a trailer or it sits on site. So we have quite a few. And we have a number of residents who are doing their own work, which means the dumpster has been there an exceedingly long time. Well, you know, it's like going to the buffet line. You get a big dumpster because you think you're going to fill it up, and it takes a lot longer to fill up.
I was going
to
say, another thing you can do is restrict the size of the dumpster, that it can only sit there for so long. Then it's got to be hauled out and do it.
That's a good point.
Except we do have a number of 40-foot dumpsters that, unless they're really filling them up every day, they've been sitting on the property and they've been full, and I drive by it two times a day to and from work, and I don't see anything change.
Yes, and from the contractor's perspective, there's full and then there's full. Because there's
full.
You know, and we do the same thing. If we get a roll-off, you fill it up and it looks full, and then when you have more stuff to put in it, you use the backhoe or piece of equipment and you compact what's in there and you get another 30% in. So there's full and there's full. But there's a dumpster a block from you that has been sitting there for months on end, and I don't think it's getting any fuller, at least not of debris.
There's all kinds of debris back in the back. They filled it up. It's back there by the garage.
Yes, when I go by twice a day, I don't see any change.
So what do we do there? If there's dumpster here that's full, and then 30 feet away, there's a pile of debris. I might shoot myself in the foot on that. I see rockers are down.
In your house, I think
the key needs to be, we need to be objective as possible and not subjective. And the problem with, you know, is glass half full and half empty. The contractor might say, I could fit another, you know, week's worth of trash in there.
You know, that's the very reason we require there to be a dumpster on site for construction, is because if we didn't require that, a number of contractors would just pile up the debris in a big mound until they had enough to bring out a container and fill it and leave. The problem with that is that a lot of what they pile up blows into somebody else's yard, ends up in another place, or becomes a bigger problem than if it were sitting in the dumpster that whole period of time. So we require the dumpster so that it's a little easier to get it put in there instead of piling it up behind the house or alongside or in the front yard. So
for now, you just want to go the odor route?
Yeah, we can immediately do that, and I think that there's also an opportunity when mosquitoes, if we get Arctic mosquitoes, I suppose it's going to be a problem right now, but the mosquitoes, we also have stagnant water already in place, and normally that's enforced where it's a fish pond or you have poor drainage that creates stagnant water on your property. But it applies equally for objects, and the if the dumpster is not oozing like Jerry's, if it's holding water and has mosquitoes in it, then we can also address this stagnant water issue.
The freeze did not kill all the mosquitoes. They're still here. All right, 6.3, discussion of National Flood Insurance Program Community Rating System application and status.
This is disheartening news. We had hustled up and we had got all of our material in, and then the person at the ISO, which is the insurance standards organization we were working with, just completely disappeared off the radar and stopped answering emails. And we knew we got into the cycle very late, and we're pushing to get in by the December deadline for this cycle. In frustration here, about 2 weeks ago, I reached out to our state counterpart on that and asked if they could perhaps find out where we were. And really what I wanted to determine was whether we were in an 8, a 7, or a 6. We were falling in that range somewhere. Unfortunately, the word that I got back was that she didn't complete our application in this cycle. So that throws us another 6 months off, which doesn't make me very happy, but that puts us in the April cycle, which then would get reported in October, which then would become effective in January. So renewals that happen after January. And since she didn't complete it then, it's still not complete, so we don't have what our rating would be. But we're going to be 6 months behind where we had hoped to be on getting the discounts. At any rate, we're still looking at a minimum of 10% discount on flood insurance, and with the high policies, that'll be a savings. But I'm really hoping to provide our residents with some of that savings this year when we were particularly hard on the property taxes. So
10% is good. 10%.
You take 10% when you get it. Yeah, and I think that that puts us in position really with the extra time to hit the 15%. With that side of things working, we may get it pushed down to 20 in the next 6 month cycle, so a year from now. So it isn't. It didn't happen, and it wasn't on our end, but we'll suck it up. In that regard, in February, I'm attending a week-long flood insurance CRS program in Pasadena, so it's going to be very convenient, but it's convenient location-wise, but it's an all-day program for a week, which will help us with the CRS as well. And so we'll just keep moving forward and plugging along. That's all I've got.
I just like to add something there. When it comes to flood insurance, if you're in the B-zone, and it applies to the other zone, the B-zone gets hit pretty heavy with premium amounts. The higher you can get above the base flood elevation, for every foot you go above that, up to 3 or 4 feet, there's a pretty significant reduction in your premium. So if somebody builds here and this goes to the 18, I'll give you an example. If you went right at the FEMA, the 17 foot, you would pay about $6,000 for a premium for a house of my size, you know, 2,500 square feet, $6,000. Whereas if you go up the additional 3 feet, you'll end up paying in the neighborhood about $3,000, about half of that. And that's where there's a generator. But it's something that people, especially contractors, my contractor and architect, nobody mentioned a thing about that. I just happened to luck out and was able to get in the 3 foot above the base flood elevation, which knocked, I'm not saving a lot of money, but it's $2,000 for my policy. I put a little enclosure underneath, it doubles it. One of the breakaway enclosures, that's the new rule now. So you end up paying about $4,000. And if I wasn't that high, I would be paying $9,000 if I was right at the 17 foot mark. Right. So
give you an update on it also, because we did build our home 3 foot higher than we needed to, and our policy was $2,300
to start, and we have a $1,900 check, and our
flood insurance will be $300 to $400 a year.
Wow.
Because we went 3 foot
higher. Is that right? Are you in the A zone?
We're down there on Brookside.
Well,
with it.
One of the other things that they did that is a huge savings is having a detached garage.
Right.
Don't enclose under the home structure at all if you can avoid it. The first tier is 1 square foot to 300 square foot. There's a penalty rate. And if you exceed 300 square foot, the penalty rate can go up exponentially. It's just a huge increase. Because they really don't want you to enclose anything underneath the structure.
But what really surprises me, the builders, contractors, architects, they don't have a clue about it. At least they've never mentioned anything to me in all that time of going back and forth, year and a half. And I just found that out, just not too long ago. That's, that three foot was a significant difference, and if I could have went up another foot, I could have easily. Would have saved me a few hundred more dollars on the whole deal. So. But that's for general information, if you know anybody in that position, whether it's an AE zone or B zone.
Yeah, that's what we had to submit to our insurance company, was
the
new elevation. And once they did the study on that,
but if I understand correctly, it's just saying that if it's closed up underneath the house, then your flood insurance, regardless of what you use it for, goes up.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Even if there's drainage and all that that's allowed in there, there's no kind of
that's correct, because it's just like an actuary table. They know a certain percentage of people will enclose it, use it for things they're not supposed to. And will enclose it in a way that it damages the structure that's above the minimum base flood elevation.
I think they told us something about
if you take one small section underneath the house, you could enclose that, like put your trash cans and stuff, but that's the only thing. In the B zone, it does.
Just
a small 250-foot square foot breakaway wall structure almost doubled my premium. So.
And we're being remapped again. And my understanding is we won't necessarily change in elevation, but the B zone may very well expand in the city. We may have more properties that fall into a B zone. So you're going to build now.
All right, 6.4, discussion of Texas Community Development Block Grant project applications and status.
I wish I could report we had a signed contract and money in the bank, where the county had money in the bank.
They said next week, and next week is here.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I put it on the agenda with the great motion. Wonder what it's to report. But what I can report is that there has been a flurry of activity, including, as is usual with the county in this process, frantic phone calls for information that they have to have 10 minutes ago. There were meetings between the Texas Rural Housing, Rural Systems folks and the county last week, where the state was here in their offices reviewing specific applications, and our application was one of them they were reviewing that they needed information on. It looks like our first project, which I previously reported that we had activity on, and was the one that we were supposed to hear something this week, was storm drainage. But the one on Thursday that had the flurry of information back and forth was our street project. Storm drainage and streets were our two largest projects, about $3.5 million out of $5.1 million. My understanding is not only was the street project one that was being reviewed last week, but all of our other projects were as well. So that's water, wastewater, and the police station. And I look forward to hearing some of those things starting to happen.
Don't we want drainage and street projects to go together so that the street project will take care of drainage projects?
Yeah, to be effective, either one has to go together.
Yeah.
They're done in concert. Whether it's separate contractors or not, it's design build, and we really want those two projects to also be the last ones finished. I don't really care if it starts first, but maybe the last ones finished, because we have an allocation of $5.1 million and that's fixed. And we can get all $5.1 million as long as we have eligible projects to use it. And part of the rationale of having the storm drainage and streets being designed built is that you just continue to do storm drainage and streets until you run out of money. And the money can be reallocated between projects. So ideally, we would like to do the police station, the water, and the wastewater, and do them right, and use up all the money that they need to use up and over, and roll it back into street and storm drainage. If street and storm drainage uses up its allocation first and it's done, then we're kind of hamstrung because we can't expand the other projects. They're fixed scope projects. So whenever they're done, and then the money goes back in the pot. So the last one in an ideal world would be storm drainage, because we can always cut more ditches and do more storm drainage work than we have street work even. So we'd like that one to string out. That's all I've got to report. Nothing happening yet.
Next week. 6.5, discussion of Coastal Impact Assistance Program, project applications, and status.
I suppose if you're old enough, you might remember when we started this. We did a study a number of years ago with Nicole Moffitt to look at coastal erosion for Miramar. We were hoping to be able to affect some coastal erosion protection before we had the next big hurricane. Aw, shucks, we missed that. We did have the coastal erosion. And we had applied repeatedly for grants. We got a grant through the GLO, CF money, to do the initial... It was a study, but it wasn't an engineer. It was not engineering. It was not design. It was not permit. It was a community assessment, if you will, to survey the community, see what type of coastal erosion the community wanted, or protection they wanted. We went through that process, and that's what that produced. We then applied for the next step, which was for engineering and permits, so that we could implement what had been fleshed out. What was happening at that time was the then county judge was taking the coastal money, which comes from a fee that's charged from offshore oil that goes into this fund, and was using it for air quality. Which, while air quality may be an admirable thing, we all felt that the coastal money that came from offshore oil rigs should be used on coastal issues and not Harris County's air quality non-attainment status. We've had a change in county judges, and the new county judge, well, agrees that it was improper to take the coastal money and reroute it to air quality. So he's routed it back, which means now there's more money back in the pot. Judge Emmett moved our project, changed the tier it was in, which put us in a higher probability. All that said, the reason I put this on agenda now is I got a call about a week ago from the person at the GLO that we did our last application with, who needed to update it because it looks like we are in queue, that we're in highly probable funding for our engineering design and permitting. Interestingly enough, in January of last year, so it's been a year ago, following Ike, there was a review and revise window on your grant applications that were pending. And I revised ours, and you may recall I came to council and talked about that, to leave it all exactly as it was with one change, and that was to remove all the riprap from the project and put in a monolithic revetment, concrete revetment at the water, so that we didn't have a repeat of what we saw with Ike of putting all that stuff up into the city. And so when I got this phone call, it includes the revetment now. So we have the revetment, we have the offshore surge breakers out there. It is everything else we had talked about before, and changing it to the revetment did not significantly impact the engineering costs, so our numbers all stayed the same. And my understanding from talking to the judge's office a year ago in advance of this was that they were breaking up the design, engineering, and permitting from construction, but that they were coupling the money. It was like they were obligating the money to do construction for anything that they approved for engineering. So at that time, the judge's office was telling me that if you got the grant for engineering, design, and permitting, that was a pretty solid indication that they were going to move forward with construction. That they didn't want to spread the money so thin to do a lot of design and not do any projects. And so they were doing this setback. So that's all very promising, and I think that the community would really appreciate it if we can get a revetment down there and protect the shore from any more erosion. And you may also recall that north of the pier, it was a wetland restoration as well. So there would be a barrier put out, and marsh grasses would go in that north portion. So I think it's all very positive. Very positive sounding.
You probably recollect, I don't recollect, I remember looking at it, four years ago. How many revetments or grinds or whatever you want to call them that extend out into the bay?
Well, this was, there were...
Do you recollect?
Yeah, there were a whole series of options. One was the groins, which are like, well, they're groins. They're just piles of rocks go out to the water.
Yeah. And it's pretty much like they're doing over at the port.
Right. But the one we ended up with doesn't have any grinds at all. What it has are these very large stainless steel cages filled with rock that create a wall that are set in the water parallel to the shoreline.
Okay.
And then on the north end, behind that wall, between the wall and the shore, it's backfilled with mud.
Yep.
And not to where the mud comes above the water, but where at low water it would, you have marsh grasses. And then south of that, it doesn't have that. It stays open on the south side.
But there's the geotubes on that side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you still...
Is that what they call geotubes, I think?
No, I'm trying to enable it with like a cave-on or... But again,
oh, geotube is the sack filled with.
Yeah, this is the stainless steel cage filled with rock, with large rock. I mean, not riprap, but it is a rock in these cages that's set in place, and then they're all attached together. So you end up with a barrier, and it creates a break for surge when it comes. And it's for erosion. It's not going to stop a hurricane. It's not a seawall, but the revetment will. Will provide much more protection in that range when we are getting a surge than the riprap did.
Well, that will help the community any way you look at it if that goes forward. And I recollect part of it, they're going to plant the taller seagrass
right
on the north side between the revetment and the shore, so that would be won't be a marsh, but it would be a tall seagrass.
Right. It'll create a nursery. It'll create a nursery, and also, you know, it's a wildlife area there. So
but it seems like they're going to put a beach on the south end.
Well, it protected the Shell Beach. It kept Shell Beach in place.
Yeah, but so they weren't going to try to add anything in there.
Not that I recall. There was a beach renourishment was one of the options that was.
Oh, well, that's what it was. Yeah,
where they bring in just a huge amount of sand.
Yeah,
but
that didn't make them pass.
Yeah,
right. Okay. Yeah. Right. And it's still on the Shorter's homepage, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the outcome of that study is on our...
Right.
You go to the very bottom, it says items of interest, and it is one of those items of interest, and you see a PowerPoint presentation that will show you what all the options were and then what the results from the community survey was and then what the outcome selection was. The only thing that's changed on that is wherever it has riprap, it is now a revetment, so it's a solid concrete shape, if you will, instead of riprap.
Sort of a curved bit,
yes,
on the highway.
Yes, that's correct. It redirects the forces of the water up, which is what the seawall does.
What about city matching funds for the construction?
Are we in? This is 100%.
This is 100%.
100%.
Good.
I like that.
I like that. Anything else on Tia? If not, 7.0, adjournment at 8:04 p.m.